Good afternoon, Richmond. You are listening to The Defenders Live, and I am your host, Anna Edwards, and today is Monday. You can learn more about The Defenders at defendersfje.org. That's our great and ancient archive site. And if you want to keep up a little bit more contemporarily, you can give us a call at 804-644-5834 or send us an email and ask us what the heck is going on at defendersfje@hotmail.com. If you want to follow this show, go to defendersliveradio.blogspot.com. That's defendersliveradio.blogspot.com. And of course, you can give me an email, shout out at defenderslivehost@gmail.com. That's defenderslivehost@gmail.com for the email. All right, let's give it a chat. This week, I want to talk a little bit about Black History Month and some of the things that are going on, and I'll start with something that's happening this evening, which is not happening in Richmond. So this is for all you folks who are out in the Norfolk and Tidewater area, that there is a program. Really, they've had quite a remarkable set of programs at Norfolk State University. At the crossroads of freedom and equality, the Emancipation Proclamation and the March on Washington, that was one of their big events. But it's pretty much the theme of their entire month of events. And the one that I want to, there's two that I want to point to. They've already happened, so it's too late, but it's good to talk about these things because they point to some principles and some approaches that I have subscribed to over the years. One of them was one of their early signature events, and that was 150 years, Conversations in the Kitchen, Parts 1 and 2. This was Part 2, Black Women Talking About 150 Years After Emancipation, the March on Washington, and Black Women Today. This was a panel discussion that featured Norfolk State University faculty staff members who were women. And the event that followed that was the Black History and the Struggle for Equality in Cuba. And both of those would have been really remarkable events to have attended on that day. That was on February the 6th. That was a Wednesday. That was the day that, of course, that my family and I were in New York celebrating the life of Jane Cortez. But Jane also had a very special and specific relationship with Cuba and did a lot of work in Cuba, both as a poet. She served on a committee to give an annual award, sort of a national Cuban cultural arts award back in the 1980s, and had ongoing friendships with people like Nancy Morejon, who is a poet, and the filmmaker Gloria Rolando, who was featured as part of the program at Norfolk State University, The Struggle for Equality in Cuba. She is working on a film called 1912, Breaking the Silence, which is a very powerful documentary documenting the massacre of a party of colored people in Cuba in 1912. One of those amazing stories that we don't hear very much about, and which does a very interesting job of connecting Africans in Cuba to Africans in the U.S. And the struggle against white supremacy that was rising like a tide in those years in the U.S. that really saw its apogee in World War II. And in the post-World War II era, with the final reduction of lynchings. But all of that took quite a lot of time. And in the 1920s, with the eugenics movement on the rise and a reassertion of white supremacy following the period of Reconstruction in the United States, it was really a very intriguing time to learn about these historical involvements of Black people with each other in resistance to these dynamics in that period. So I would keep my ears and eyes peeled for both the final screening of the completed film, 1912, Breaking the Silence, but also for these kinds of conversations. All it does is make us all a whole lot smarter about our history and about the conclusions that we draw about where people are coming from when they present you with certain perspectives. And these are very important to understand. It's part of how we, when we talk about seeking unity and seeking working together and understanding each other's problems and oppressions and understanding how to create solutions for the future, if you just don't know the history, you're just not going to do it right. So that's where we are. The other event I'll point to is one that I'm excited that I get to be involved in, and that's presenting a program tonight called The African Heritage of Cultural Diversity, Lessons from the History of Mali. This will take place also at Norfolk State this evening at 6:30. And I was invited to do that by a man named Dr. Jeffrey de la Fourcade. He's a professor there of French and other studies, and I believe it's world studies, so forgive me, Jeffrey. He was also a sponsor for Dr. Tomás Fernández Robaina, who's an archivist in the Cuban National Library, and for filmmaker Gloria Rolando when they were in Richmond a few months ago, also doing a sort of a screening of an excerpt of the film 1912, Breaking the Silence. So all things being interrelated, there are some very interesting events. There is on our website at Defenders Live. Radio.blogspot.com. There will be a link to these programs. The rest of the month will also feature some additional programming along that vein. In addition, there is what is happening in Richmond, of course, and culturally speaking, we love to promote, everything that's going on that relates to music and arts and history, and there's just always a lot going on. I'm excited to be able to say that there is a performance on Saturday by a Gambian kora player and a Malian balafon player. They are going to pair up together to do what will be an absolutely gorgeous concert of music at the Neighborhood Resource Center. And if you want to learn more about that, just go, Google NRC in Fulton Hill. That's the Neighborhood Resource Center in Fulton Hill in Richmond, and get yourself some information about that so that you can decide whether or not it's the thing you want to do for your Saturday night. This past Valentine's Day was a little thwarted for me, anyway. We just kept having too many things to do, and so we didn't get to just sort of relax and enjoy the potential of a Valentine's Day celebration. So if you were anything like me, I would be checking out some of these opportunities for music like we don't normally get around here, and explore that. But you also want to explore, if you have any curiosity about what Black History Month means to people, and including things, I think for a lot of folks, there is not always an understanding about where it comes from, why there's this need to emphasize Black History Month even at this point, and why there's also a pushback even from the Black community that, Black history happens all the time. So why just in February do we learn about Harriet Tubman and Martin Luther King? And although I gotta say, I'm very interested in the fact that there seems to be an overwhelming re-emphasis on Martin Luther King to the exclusion of almost everybody else, and certainly Malcolm X, this year. I don't know if that's true for last year, but this year I feel like the only figure that's being discussed is Martin Luther King. And I think that some of that may have to do with the fact that there is this comparison going on between President Barack Obama and Martin Luther King, and whether President Obama represents the realization of Martin Luther King's dream. I think it's a narrow interpretation, if you ask me, but I understand why people want to grasp onto an idea that is sort of easily understood and then expand on it. But I hope that's not the only reason, and I hope that that folks are out there learning more about the history of our country in relation to Africans and African-American contributions. One of the other programs that took place just a week ago on Monday, February 11th at Norfolk State was called Walter Rodney Honoring a Legacy of African Diaspora and Black Consciousness. And that featured Dr. Patricia Rodney, who's the widow of Guyanese scholar and Pan-African activist Walter Rodney, who was assassinated in 1971 in Guyana for his, outspoken, ongoing organizing and ability to, as an academic and as a scholar and as an activist, to give voice to the origins of the struggles of African people still living under colonization in the post-colonial period, and really recognizing and identifying and working with those who were struggling against the oppression of African peoples in diasporic communities. He was working specifically in Guyana, but had traveled around Africa. And one of his most famous books is called How Europe Underdeveloped Africa. And that is one of the books that that helped explain to me, by using the term underdevelopment, it helped me to understand what development means and what it has meant in Africa and what it means in the United States. And I think our understanding of development and underdevelopment in the Black community can be very much tied to the experience of people going through gentrification and urban renewal projects, and the destruction of existing communities, which, you know, may have had significant problems, but were wiped out and without any ability to rebuild or reinvest or protect one's own assets. So these are, again, connections to scholars and workers in these struggles that are, if not contemporary, certainly more contemporary than, the history we tend to want to focus on, which sort of leapfrogs from the civil rights era back to the Civil War and the struggle to end slavery. But all of these conversations do and will continue to overlap and be braided with all of the other aspects of our struggles today. So when we are talking about struggles for better rates for our water, the public water system, there is a group that is working on trying to draw attention to and push back on the city water supply to not charge the exorbitant base fees that we have to pay. That Richmond has one of the highest rates for that that basic fee for water provision than in the country. It seems to be more than several times the cost of a basic water fee, even in the Tidewater area. So, the struggles for access to things like water, like food, as we talk about, the quality of the food that we get from our factory systems versus the quality of food that we get if we can grow it ourselves and buy it locally. These are all issues of access and self-determination. Do we have the right and the ability to determine for ourselves, where we're going to live, what we're going to eat, how we're going to make our livings, and how we're going to build our communities? So Black History Month offers very, very interesting opportunities for everyone to understand more of our community historically and contemporarily. And of course, as I say that, I say that you need to look at that and then take advantage of every other sort of point of emphasis that either universities or our library systems or our civic organizations will present. Next month, we know that it's also Women's History Month. So what does it give us the opportunity to study and to learn if we do it through the lens of examining women's history? This is a way for us to connect with all of our history. And so don't miss these opportunities. So when I talked about Walter Rodney, so he's a man, he's an African man living in Guyana. That's the diasporic nation that he grew up in, and gives his perspective on the material basis for development and underdevelopment. And yet this program is being presented by his widow, Dr. Patricia Rodney, who is clearly an ongoing activist and promoter of these ideas, and is doing work in her own right. And what are her contributions to history, and what has that meant in her life as a woman in the field of academics and in the field of politics and consciousness raising, because we know that there have been struggles by women within the left or within progressive struggles. Women have still had to fight the good fight for their gender and for empowerment of women. And then when we talk about what that means in terms of families, we come back to how are we taking care of our families? Because if we aren't taking care of our families, then we aren't taking care of our societies. And then, of course, you can go from there to saying, what does family mean? Who defines family? This morning, there was a piece in the, I think it was in the Daily Paper. And if not, it was something I read in conjunction with reading that this morning, but it talked about someone saying that they were opposed to gay marriage because it destroyed the idea of marriage being fundamentally a procreative activity. And in our conversations this morning at the breakfast table about it, we were like, well, that's really fascinating, because if you entirely limit the purpose of marriage to procreation, then you are wiping out marriage for a phenomenally large percentage of the population, including people who marry after they've had children, or people who are not going to or cannot have children. You are deciding to become sort of so fundamentalist and so narrow in a viewpoint that in a way you could be seen as someone who is so far out of step, so unwilling to observe the natural evolution and the complexities of our lives, that you're just out of touch, and that's not going to work, because the only way you're going to get people to adhere to that narrow a fundamentalist perspective is by force. And we do an awful lot of complaining about being forced to prescribe to one narrow perspective these days, so that it seems odd that we would want to raise it in some other specter, as another specter in our daily machinations that we have to that we find we have to defend ourselves at the micro level and the macro level from outdated fundamentalist ideas. So let's just, you know, that's when I want to say, take a chill pill and look around you and recognize your family and your friends and the people who live around you. Let me take a breath and let you know that you are listening to The Defenders Live here on WRIR. It's 97.3 Richmond's radio for the rest of us. You can learn more at WRIR.org, and you can listen live online at WRIR.org. Just click listen, and it will take you through the process. And of course, if you want to learn more about Defenders Live, it's defendersliveradio.blogspot.com and defendersfje.org or defendersfje.blogspot.com. I'd like to offer a reminder about a couple of trials that the defenders have been keeping an eye on, and one is the lawsuit filed by former City Councilman Saad El Amin, which is a lawsuit to end the or to return civil rights to ex-felons, to end the permanent loss of civil rights for felons unless they go through this application process and are granted their civil rights back by the standing governor of the state. Currently, there are upwards of 400,000 men and women who have lost the right to vote and the right to run for office. They have lost these civil rights even though they have long since served their sentences and must go through an application process that seems to result in approximately 3,000 to 4,000 people getting their rights back each year. And the complaint has been longstanding that this process is onerous, and Virginia is only one of two states that that does this. So the hearing is taking place in the federal courthouse building this coming Friday, February 22nd. And I believe it's at 9:30 in the morning. And you can look for more information about that coming out from the defenders and on their website as we continue to encourage people to show up for that. If this lawsuit is successful, It has a tremendous and direct impact on this law in the state of Virginia. So this bears paying attention to. The other event that we want to remind you about takes place later in May, and the main reason I'm doing it is so that people are not confused. There is the trial for Ashley Williams, whose case we've followed on this show, is scheduled for May 20th, not this week, but May 20th. So Saad El-Amin's hearing is this Friday at the Federal Courthouse Building, and Ashley Williams is in May, on May 20th. So just want to make sure that you've got that. I recommend checking out what else is going on in the city in terms of Black History Month this month and for the rest of the and for the rest of February. And one of the programs that was started here 3 years ago by the Department of African American Studies is the it's called the African Community Course, and they are now taking place on Fridays. And they are at the Family Resource Center in Church Hill. This was a program that was originated by the current department chair, Dr. Sean Utsi. And it continues for this term, beginning this Friday. So that's Friday evening at the Family Resource Center. I believe they start at 6 p.m. And if you, again, go to the VCU website, and search for the African Community Course from the Department of African American Studies, you should find a schedule there. It usually tries to present the entire schedule in advance. But that's on a weekly basis, and typically goes on for 2 months. This is a very interesting idea, and I'm going to run quickly through it, because if you haven't heard it before, Black History Month and programs like the development of the Kwanzaa Festival and the existence of departments of African American Studies bring to the community the scholarship and the experience of the African American community in the United States. And what's important about the and unique about the Department of African American Studies is that that discipline involves all disciplines in a university. And it is because it is people who are studying the African-American experience within these various disciplines, so that the teachers and the studies that are going on in that department, you know, come from all over the university. It ties it directly to its origins, was that this kind of scholarship was entirely missing from our university and colleges systems, unless a specific professor brought it into the classroom or into their field of study. So there was active community struggle to get this field of study put into our universities, and this is one of the more direct programmatic returns to the community, where they are taking the scholarship and the minds and the people who are in these departments and who are investigating and studying in these arenas, and they are bringing these classes to the community free of charge on a weekly basis every semester through VCU. And so this is really quite a gift to the community, and in some ways it's an entitlement, right? Because we're entitled to know what it is that people are studying. We can't all go to college. We can't all... we're not all going to go to college. It's just not going to happen. But at the same time, it is we, the people, who benefit from the fact that we have universities and colleges, and from the fact that there are these arenas where people can study in very concentrated ways those areas of interest that we hope, once they leave the college system, is a benefit and empowerment to the community at large. So I would encourage you to check out the information about that series of classes, again, at the Department of African American Studies pages on the VCU website. So I hope that you are sort of examining and thinking about any of the different ways in which you can participate in Black History Month. And, if you're a little scared of politics, well, there's always music and arts, right? Culture is the way in. And, you know, another piece of culture is food, Southern food. Oh, Southern food is black food. Southern food is, you know, Scottish food. Southern food is all this food that's come together and become, you know, Southern soul food, Southern, oh my God, are we not ham biscuit people in the state of Virginia? And we like our peanut pie and peanut soup. And, you know, obviously collard greens and smothered chicken. You know, I don't hear people talk about smothered chicken. I hear fried chicken here all the time. But when I was growing up in California, smothered chicken, that's what we used to get. And remember, my mother, who is Norwegian, made smothered chicken. And, you know, my grandmothers and my father made smothered chicken. And then he took a trip to Africa and he came back and he was making, you know, smothered chicken with peanut sauce and beef stew with peanuts in it. And it was like, oh my goodness, the world opens you up in these amazing ways. And I tell you, one of the best ways is food, right? We need to eat. We all eat. We like what we like, and we like finding out that there's more good stuff out there. So if your way in and through Black History Month is about the food, oh, let me tell you, Richmond is rife with good restaurants, and there are great soul food out there. And in addition, there's this great blog that I came across. I think several people must have recommended it to me in the same week, because now I think it was my bright idea. But the truth is, this guy is he's black and he's Jewish, and he is a culinary anthropologist. And his blog spot is Michael Twitty. No, that's his name, Michael Twitty. But the blog spot is called Afro Culinaria, A-F-R-O-C-U-L-I-N-A-R-I-A, Afro Culinaria. And it's really fascinating because he is very interested in the origins of the foods that we eat and how they came from Africa to the U.S. and made all their sort of evolutional developments through both plantation lifestyle and just being agricultural, and how people used to live in these tight communities, and how butchering the hog was a community event. It wasn't just something you did on the farm by yourself. And you know, where our barbecue comes from, where our, the way that we cook our greens comes from, and all the other really gorgeous and wonderful things that we eat. Some of it is not as healthy for us, but that's partly because we don't work as hard as we used to, and we're just not physically burning up the carbs and the calories the way we used to. But we can adapt. There are all kinds of ways to adapt and still maintain a delicious and healthy enjoyment of these foods that are traditional to us and can take us all the way back to Africa and all the way back to Europe and all the way back to South America and all the way back to China and the Philippines and Japan and, you know, the Alaska and all these places where this food that we eat, we have been I don't want to say, blessed is not the right word, because it has been very specific economic and political history that has gotten us access to the foods that we have access to in our country. And so that's something that's important to pay attention to. We wouldn't have sugar if we hadn't had Haiti and the slave trade. And so you got to look at our sugar, you got to look at our coffee, you got to look at the chocolate, you got to look at corn and potatoes and tomatoes and peanuts and cotton. And if you learn about those things that you enjoy eating and wearing and decorating your house with, then you're touching history, and you should understand it, right? That's what Black History Month is all about. And there it is. So I want to thank you for tuning in to Defenders Live this week and taking this little journey with me, talking a little bit about history and culture and what's happening and what should be happening. And I hope you'll keep up the struggle, and remember that kindness matters, and we will talk to you next week. Thanks.